Shane, if it's okay with you, I'd like to ask you a question. You're finishing your first year as a writing program administrator at one of the largest universities in the United States. And I'd like you to reflect a little bit on that experience with us. John Dewey, whose work has had a great influence on me throughout my whole career as an educator and administrator, discusses the habits of reflecting in his book, How We Think. He writes, "While we cannot learn to be taught to think, we do have to learn how to think well, especially how to acquire the general habit of reflecting," unquote. And Nancy builds on this work, along with the work of Vygotsky and Piaget and others, to ground her critical work in reflection in the writing classroom. And much of being an administrator comes from our pedagogical practices and our habits of mind. And in her book, The Rhetoric of Reflection, Nancy writes, quote, "Reflection is a process we use to make meaning and to make knowledge, a kind of meaning and knowledge unique to reflection, given its intersectionality. Its insistence that only through bringing the human and the world together to theorize can reflective knowledge and meaning be made," unquote. So my question to you is, what X factor characteristics are you finding useful in building habits for reflection as a WPA early on in your career? Secondly, whose voices are the X factor administrators you listen to or look to when doing this work?
I think I'm going to answer your question by maybe connecting some of the through lines in this conversation. And then also with Yancey's work, particularly with writing assessment and portfolio. So I'm thinking here about how Yancey situates reflection as a primary text, not just a secondary text. And you know, I'm reminded that reflection isn't just looking back and looking forward. And I think kind of what others have already mentioned, that it's also just looking around you. And I feel like this is a habit. Like if I had to identify one habit that I try to situate myself in as a WPA, is that looking around. I think that's really, really important for me, just as a person, but also as a WPA. I think I'm mindful of this and try to practice this a lot, like a whole lot. I'm mindful that really it's never about me. It's about others. It's about instructors. It's about who's teaching in our classes. It's about our students. The writing program that it's not about me. The writing classroom isn't about me. And I think a part of that kind of building this habit of reflection is realizing that, acknowledging that, understanding that it's not about me. I'm just here to support and encourage and build up. And Sheila mentioned advocacy. I advocate for instructors and for students. We talked a lot about mentorship earlier and how Yancey embodied that with graduate students. And she mentions also in this video that without them, then work wouldn't happen. Like things just wouldn't happen in a program. And I'm very lucky and fortunate that I get to be in a position to work with and to work alongside graduate students and to mentor them and to support them and encourage them and build them up. I think that's essential. It's one of my favorite aspects of this work. So I always think about that, how the writing class doesn't exist without students, how the writing program doesn't exist without teachers. And I've just been really lucky. And I know that we mentioned hard work and luck, and like Yancey said in the video, I've been lucky in the situations that I've found myself in, and most of them really do feel quite coincidental. I'll tell a story. So I didn't really even know that rhetoric and composition existed as an undergrad, and in that situation, I just listened to a mentor, a professor at Western Kentucky University. His name was Wes Berry. And I just trusted him. I really liked him. I think I saw myself in him in a lot of ways. He was a Kentuckian, very working class background, family, first gen student. So I just remember sitting in his office and just kind of listening. And I brought up grad school and maybe going to grad school. I saw my older brother do it, and I thought maybe I could do that too. So I remember talking with him, and And really he was like, apply to rhetoric and composition program. So I did that. And I mean, that felt coincidental that I didn't even know what rhetoric and composition was. And then I applied to three grad programs. So I moved from South Central Kentucky to California. And then I think another like coincidence, or I just got really lucky. I ended up at Fresno State with a Sal Inouye as my thesis chair. And then I went to Kansas and worked with Mary Jo Rife, was my dissertation chair. And I think all these people were mentors, and of course they're mentors. They just modeled compassion. So other kind of habits of reflection is, how am I modeling compassion and care and generosity and leadership and collaboration? And then I also think of another situation at my previous institution, the University of Southern Mississippi, of seeing Joyce Inman, who, she was the WPA before me. And she was just a phenomenal model, a great leader, how she led the writing program, how she cared about students and instructors, and her advocacy for the program and the support of students and instructors really shaped and informed me and my understanding of how I wanted to be in that position. So I was really fortunate to follow in her footsteps. So I think that's kind of the looking back reflection. But I kind of want to talk a little bit about that kind of looking alongside, because I think it's easy for me to look back. It's actually really hard for me to look forward, probably. I prefer looking around me, Duane. So I think that might be the less popular or talked about aspect of reflection, is that looking alongside and not just back and forward. But you mentioned, Duane, how she modeled that, and how she modeled service to our field and our discipline. And I think that's just so important. I feel like my job as a WPA is really this working alongside. So I think to answer your question about who am I listening to and who I'm looking at in doing this work, I think a lot of it is previous mentors, but also current instructors in our program. It's really important to think across programs and across institutions and across positionalities, to look beyond yourself, not just first year writing, but looking at other kinds of WPA work, from WAC to writing centers to first year writing. I think there's several voices, people like Stacey Perriman Clark that I really look up to from afar, Frankie Condon, Ashanka Kumari, Travis Webster, Maya Poe. I really look around again, maybe not back, not forward, but just look around me and seeing what other people are doing. And I tell Sherry all the time, I think I'm just trying to, you know, show up and be present and do a good job and listen to others and collaborate. So I think that's my perspectives and thoughts as an early career WPA.
It's interesting to listening to you sort of go through this, and you talk about the opportunities and the how you've been sort of in the right place, and you know, and understood that. And I think that when we started this, we were talking a little bit more about this idea of reflection and transfer and whatnot. And I think the difference between someone who does that and does nothing with it, and someone who does it and utilizes it in their own administrative practices, is this concept of reflection and this notion of transfer. So when you're considering all of the people, when you're thinking about the past and you're trying to figure out all these people that have impacted you and whatnot, you're not just thinking, you're meta thinking, you're thinking about it in terms of, you're utilizing the reflection, even though you don't realize you're utilizing the reflection, you know, because it's shaping you. And that's really kind of cool to see. And then when you consider how that then influences the way you, as a newer in this space, I should say, newer WPA in this space, navigate what you do, then what you're doing is you've thought it through enough to know, now what am I going to do in this situation that that accounts for what I've learned through my reflection? And that's transfer. I mean, it's really kind of exciting when we think about, you know, adding these words to some ideas that have come up throughout all of the opportunities. And I think that's part of the reason I've gravitated towards a lot of Yancey's work, is because there are two things. One, I constantly feel like what I have to say, everybody knows. So why would I say it, right? So I'm constantly thinking, why would I write that down? That's just common sense. Everybody knows that, right? And so, but when I started to read some of her work, I was like, that's just common sense, you know, but she's writing it down, you know? And so it was really kind of cool because now we're talking about this, like you're talking about, well, I just do so-and-so and so-and-so, but what you're actually doing is you're reflecting in a way to learn and then transferring that to a new environment each time you do it, each sort of opportunity, every X factor allows us an opportunity to reflect and then to think about, oh, there's a new situation. So that's just basically applying that kind of concept to a new situation. So I really like the way that some of her work and some of what we've read about her work as scholars in this discipline has made what we do feel natural, but we needed someone to give it language in very specific ways. And I think that a lot of her work has given language to what we thought, this is just what you do, right? And that's what you do, you know? And, but we now have words to sort of talk about it. And then even when we start to pick apart a little bit of what we're talking about, we're like, oh yeah, that's really reflection. And we all know that if you don't actually do something with that reflection, if you don't actually spend time to account for it in a way that makes it real and makes it knowledge for you at that time, there's no ability to transfer it to a new situation, right? And so, but we just sort of do this. And I appreciate the ways in which, as particularly as a new WPA in this environment, you are able to take the things that you are thinking about, reflect on those concepts, reflect on the people, the ideas and whatnot, and then transfer it, but make it your own. Make it something that is new. And I really kind of thought that was cool, particularly tying it back to what Sherry had talked about a little few minutes ago in terms of reflection and transfer.
I think there are a couple of things, if I can pull out that thread a little bit more, Sheila, and think a little bit about some of the things that Kathy's talked to us about X Factor and what it means to do the X Factor work, but who are the X Factor administrators? And so back to your original comment, Shane, about like how we respond, how we receive people, right? And it's not about us. You're right. You are so, so right. And you're so wise to be a mid-career scholar and doing this kind of work and to be thinking about like, it's not about us, because it takes so many decades for many people to really, really get that, Shane, that it's not about us. And so how we move our faces or how people, you know, perceive what is happening in those moments. But for me, it is often Dwayne's voice in my head. And there were a large number of grad students before me who kind of coined this, what would Dwayne do? And it was because we knew that he handled with care and grace and compassion. He is the Mr. Rogers of our field. And in this sense, I'm sorry, Dwayne, if you don't maybe like that analogy, but you always think about the neighborhood and the people there in that space. And so it's also Sheila's voice that sometimes hear, or Aurora's voice, or Susan's voice, or Shane's voice, you know, those voices that my contemporaries that give me opportunity to pause and think through and reflect and to think about this administrative work and what we are doing and who we're doing that work for. But, you know, Kathy talks in her text that we had access to about this idea. We talked a bit about what you don't anticipate and who you call upon, right? And so how we call upon each other whenever things are tough or we want to celebrate. But I want to acknowledge that every single one of us are parents. And so the negotiations we have made with our families to have these jobs have come at a high price for most of us. The sacrifices that our children have made for us to have these careers are significant. And oftentimes, and Kathy opens her commentary about Genevieve is very small and what's happening with her daughter and her negotiation with her spouse to move. She has a quote in here, and she talks about the choices we make to make space for the work and how she is how she was having to negotiate. I think if I could go back to when I was in your shoes, when I had children that were about your age, the opportunity to go home at 3 p.m. and play tea party with my daughter, I would take it, right? And, you know, we can't turn back that time. So I think the gift that we could give to the young scholars who younger scholars in the field is to help them think about the prioritization of their families, because I don't know that it was said to us the way it needed to be said to us all the time. And we know many of our colleagues who have made great, great sacrifices for their careers. And it should not be either or, it should be and both. And that is just simply not said to women. And it's certainly, Dr. Carter Todd, maybe you can say, it has not been said to women of color. So
And there's something I don't want to leave unsaid in some ways. And you were saying how, you know, you live your expressions like your feelings are on your face. And I think that I've never been that way. And I think that it's because of the position I occupy in higher education. I am not allowed to feel in the same ways. I am not allowed to respond in the same ways. And so I think that what we consider the norm when we're thinking about sort of both mentoring and advising and considering and shaping, I think we need to, and I've said it in every realm, I really am not a great fan of teasing apart, but we need to think about these intersectional spaces, and we need to be able to hear that it is not the same space for all people. I think that I go to departmental, you know, like other chairs meeting, and I'm the only one on the screen that looks like me. And that does, like you were saying, when the first voice you hear isn't your own, that does damage, you know, in its own way. And I think about walking across campus and having, you know, 4 to 5 slides of no one expecting me to be 1 faculty or 2 an administrative faculty at this institution. And you walk into that before you even hit your desk. And I think that we do need to start to consider some of the toil that takes on any individual. But I think that what is most problematic about that is not understanding the intense labor that occurs. Like you're talking about, you'd like to clone yourself so that you can be somewhere else and somewhere. But if I've experienced that much before I even hit the door, and then I come back to my meeting or something and someone talks to me and I have to figure out whether or not this is coming from a place of insecurity or a place of racism or a place of sexism, or usually it's a wonderful combo pack and you still deal with it, right? But all of that invisible labor tires a person. It exhausts a person. So when you're thinking about just moving forward and, you know, and if I could go back and be mid-career again, what would I choose or what would I do? I think we need to acknowledge that. We need to say that you do not have to constantly be bruised in this way. But while we're saying it, we have to say, but you may choose that, and you can choose when you want to fight these battles. I don't know that I can't decide what I'm going to do for my very, very last sprint, because I don't know, you know, you don't know how much armor you still have left. And so when we're thinking about the role of those who have done a lot for a lot of people, like we see Yancey talking about, and the opportunities and the X factors and whatnot, I think we really need to consider for all those positions of administration, how are we affording those people the opportunities and what sacrifices are being made to exist in those spaces? And so when we say to them, well, why don't you just go ahead for this next position? Are we really thinking, are we saying, you know, do you have the strength, the fortitude, or the desire to go at the battle at that next level? And I think that that is something that, I think it's something that needs to be considered in all of these conversations. And not just because, you know, it's not just my being Black for you for a moment. It's about being realistic about our positionality and thinking about all that we have to do. And so when someone asks us to serve in a certain way, we have to have that opportunity, and you can't be disappointed if we choose not to do that for you, right? But then we can choose when we want to do that, and we can choose as individuals. I choose when I want to be Black for someone. I choose when I want to take apart what's going on. I choose when I call it what I call it. And sometimes I think it's very clear that we have to provide space for that. I think we have to provide space for that. So if I'm not me, if I'm not allowed to be me, if I'm not allowed to be the administrator who I am, then I am not providing a space for that next person. If I don't call it what it is, then it continues to be insidious. It continues to be structural. It continues to be pervasive.